This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, trying to get an update on what's going on in Kansas City with the snow and the weather conditions and all that stuff. But while we wait, let's go to Bill in Anacortes. Hey, Bill.
Hi, John. You know, it seems to me that our number one priority ought to be a field goal kicker. When we let Steven Hauschka go 2 years ago for a measly $1 million, I thought that was the worst decision they made for a long time.
But you know, the weird part is what he missed 10 field goals in his last year, and you know, that kind of put the little bit of fear that maybe he was starting to decline. But now, as it turns out, I mean, he bounced back and has had two really good seasons in Buffalo.
Yeah, the Buffalo Bills go to the playoffs last year, and last year I think we lost three games by 3 points or less, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm. And that's true.
Look what
no question.
This year. Second half of the playoff game, we don't have a field goal kicker, and then we do a ridiculous onside punt. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone in the draft that we can that's a good kicker? Or, you know, I'd spend all the money we need to get the best kicker we can get. That's where priority's got to be.
Well, I can't disagree. I think that they've got to get that result because, I mean, if you include Stevens last year, that means they've had 3 years that have been off on the kicking, and they've got to get that result because, you know, when you play a lot of fourth quarter type of games like this team, you need those field goals to be able to win. And, and you saw that they were able to win the two Arizona games with a field goal by Sebastian at the end. But, it's easier. I mean, and that's the thing that's so strange because, you look at the kicking that was done by Jason Myers, the guy that they kind of just signed at this point last year. He was the kicker that's now going to the Pro Bowl in the AFC for the New York Jets.
Right. Is Sebastian coming back next year, or do we know?
I would tend to doubt it. I mean, first, I think he has to make the decision at the age of 40, and with all the injuries he's had this year, the hip problems and all that, you know, if he wants to continue playing, my guess is he still has a strong enough leg, so he probably will do that. But, I'd say right now that they're probably going to go a different direction.
In the game, I don't think. So, all right.
Yeah, so he had the hamstring pull, and that. But again, it's like, they was trying to kick a 57-yarder. But, I mean, he was just had so many injuries in December and into January. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Joining us right now is Stephen St. John's of Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. And I guess the big thing, Stephen, is first off, describe the weather conditions there.
Well, John, I am driving into the stadium actually at a standstill on 435, just about a mile out of the stadium. I just finished with my 3 hours of the pregame show at our radio station, heading over. Blizzard-like conditions. The highway is at a standstill. It is absolutely awful. They're expecting anywhere from 6, maybe all the way up to 10 inches of snow. It's snowing very hard now. It's about 31 degrees. The visibility is very poor. The weatherman here and locally that sometimes they're accused of overselling storms. Well, most of them undersold this one. This is going to be a crazy atmosphere for all the fans that can navigate their way through this and actually get to Arrowhead Stadium by 3:35 Central.
Yeah, and that's going to be scary because I would imagine that a lot of people are not going to be able to make it by kickoff time.
Look, the Kansas City Chiefs are a regional team. They have a lot of fans, towards St. Louis and Nebraska and Iowa and Oklahoma. There's a lot of people that are driving a long way to get to this game. They're having trouble. I-70 between St. Louis and Kansas City was an absolute standstill all night and overnight. And so, yes, I'm going to be very curious to see how many fans actually can get in the stadium for the game.
Yeah, curiously, I mean, I'm trying to remember the last home game because I remember in the playoffs I was going to go to it, but I know there was a snowstorm then, and so I ended up canceling the trip. I mean, in that last, was there snow in that last home game for the playoffs?
It was a couple of years ago, and it was the divisional round matchup between the Chiefs and the Steelers, and there was actually an ice storm that forced the game to be moved to a Sunday night primetime game. And, of course, we remember that game ended up 18-16 in favor of the Steelers. Another very disappointing loss in the divisional round that the Chiefs fans that have been following this team the last couple of decades are all too familiar with.
Now, curiously, just the footing conditions now, because one thing I'm wondering, even though the Colts are a dome team, you know, you think they're going to be more affected by the weather. Am I not right in thinking that the Chiefs will be more affected because their game is speed, particularly with Tyreek Hill and on offense, and then also that this could negatively affect the three great pass rushers that they have?
You know, that's going to be interesting to see because some people feel like maybe you know, the defense could suffer because, you know, the offense knows where they're going. The defense is going to have to react, and that could cause them to lose their footing and just be a step slower than the offense is. So, you know, I think it just really depends on the individual player and how they're able to handle the conditions. The Chiefs, of course, here in Kansas City, they're used to wild weather where just earlier this week it was close to 60 degrees. And so they're no stranger to this. But this is excessive even for Kansas City weather. Look, Andrew Luck and the Colts, they love to run the football. You would think a team that loves to run the football like they have, they'll have some success in the snow. It's really anyone's guess right now. That's been a big debate on who this weather actually favors, the Chiefs or the Colts.
And I guess that's the thing that's so weird is that here's Kansas City with some of the best home field crowds that you can have. I mean, one of the loudest crowds. I mean, almost like a college-type environment with how loyal the fans are and how good they are and how noisy they are. But yet you look, it's now all the way back to 1994 that the Chiefs have won a home game in the playoffs. I mean, that to me is one of the most baffling stats that I could imagine, particularly with what should be a great home field advantage because of the crowd.
You know, the big problem, John, has been, you know, since that last home win that you referenced, and that was January of 1994 when Joe Montana led the Chiefs to an overtime victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, in the playoff matchups that they've lost, the Chiefs have always had the lesser quarterback since they had an aging Joe Montana. They've always had the lesser quarterback. They've lost to the better quarterback in the playoffs time and time again, and that's why the optimistic Chiefs, that Chiefs fans that actually believe that the misery is going to end today, they point to Patrick Mahomes II. Finally, the Chiefs have their franchise quarterback. Finally, they have the best quarterback on the field, the MVP candidate. He should be the MVP. And look, Seattle fans know that all too well. Russell Wilson, more times than not, he's the best quarterback on the field, a franchise quarterback that could take you to the promised land. And that's what the Chiefs believe they have in Mahomes. Even though Andrew Luck is no slouch, it's going to be a great matchup between quarterbacks today, even in the snow.
Oh, no question about it, because, you know, Andrew Luck is such a great one. He's having such a great year. But, boy, I tell you what, Mahomes is special. I mean, I think what I've seen about four Chiefs games live this year, and what just so impresses me is just not just, you know, his arm, but everything. I mean, his ability to recognize things, his ability to get the second and third reads. I mean, he is the real deal.
He absolutely is, and I'll be honest with you, you know, not only covering the team, but a lifelong Kansas City and grew up a Chiefs fan, it's almost like I need to pinch myself and make sure I'm not dreaming because, you know, Chiefs fans have wanted the Chiefs to draft a quarterback in the first round. The last time they did it before Mahomes was when they drafted Todd Blackledge in the 1983 draft, and they didn't do it again. They were burned so bad by that bust. But finally, they take a chance. They move up and get Patrick Mahomes. And when they finally take that leap and draft a quarterback in the first round, it looks like they nailed the pick. And not only is he the best young quarterback in the game, he's the odds-on favorite to win the MVP. And like you said, only the second quarterback ever to have 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards in a season. And that's why Chiefs fans feel like that this is the kid we've been waiting for to finally end the losing streak at home in the playoffs.
Yeah, no question. And I think that would be something that could really get it going. And boy, but I tell you what, they hit the Colts at the wrong time in the sense the Colts have won 9 out of the last 10 games. You know, they've got a great offensive line for pass blocking. I mean, they may not have a lot of depth at the pass catching ability because again, it's like, you know, they have T.Y. Hilton and that's about it. But boy, they just got everything going so well.
They do, and look, you know, the Chiefs, they hopefully will benefit from that extra week of rest to get some injured players back out there. Sammy Watkins is going to play for the first time in almost 2 months, and he just adds one more weapon to the arsenal for Patrick Mahomes II. Eric Berry, you know, he didn't practice the last couple of days, and they said still there's he's questionable and could be a game time decision. I'd be shocked if he played, and if he does, it's anyone's guess if he could even make an impact at this point. That's disappointing, but the Chiefs could really use Sammy Watkins back because an already good offense becomes dynamic with him on the field, and hopefully this Chiefs pass rush won't be too slowed down too much by the snow, because that's really their only chance of slowing down the Colts offense. If Dee Ford and Justin Houston and then Chris Jones can get to Andrew Luck and force him into making a bad mistake or two, that could be all the difference they need to win this football game.
Why are they submitting so bad in the secondary this year, aside from the fact they haven't had Eric Berry? But in their pass coverage, I mean, it has been bad.
You know, Bob Sutton relies so much on the safety position in his defense. And look, when you unexpectedly lose Eric Berry and Daniel Sorensen, the two starters in the preseason, and then you walk into the season knowing that you have to deal with, you know, the first half of the season without your two starting safeties. I mean, they were down to the fourth and fifth string guys. Jordan Lucas, who's probably going to start today, was a guy they acquired from Miami for a seventh-round pick right before the season started. He didn't have the benefit of a training camp, and they had undrafted free agents out there, and it's been a revolving door there. And so that's one reason. And then, you know, the second reason is just poor tackling. The linebackers, the middle linebackers, that's been a disappointment because they spent a lot of money on Anthony Hitchens in the free agent market. They targeted him from the Dallas Cowboys, and he just has not played as well as they would hope. They traded for Reggie Ragland just a year and a half ago, and then he's underperformed. So bad safety play, poor tackling by the inside linebackers, and the inability to stop the run. That's why the Chiefs defense has struggled.
But they do have three great pass rushers. And I don't – did Chris Jones get a sack in the last game? Because I'm wondering, did he finally change his glove, which, as he said, smells like dead animal? Because he had that streak going that he did not – you know, every time he would get a sack in a game, he had one of the longest streaks in NFL history. He kept his glove, but, of course, it was smelly. Has he finally gotten a new glove yet?
Oh, no, that glove's still around, and let me tell you, his teammates are not a fan, because as bad as it smells, as bad as you've been told it smells worse. I've had a chance to get close enough to it to realize I would not ever want that on my hand, and that would probably ruin my hand for the rest of my life. So, but all kidding aside, Chris Jones has been phenomenal. Now, he sometimes will freelance, and that will lead to some big run plays that the Chiefs give up because he's trying to get to the quarterback. But look, for a guy like that that can play the inside and the outside on the defensive line, it's hard to complain about him as he's been one of the best sack guys in the NFL. But they need him, and they need Justin Houston, and they need Dee Ford to get after the quarterback, and that's why it's so important for them to play from in front. Jump out to a lead and let these pass rushers pin their ears back and get after Andrew Luck.
Okay, well, it should be fun to watch. I mean, again, I feel bad for you, and I feel bad for the fans right now stuck in the bad traffic and trying to get in there with the weather. Stephen St. John, best of luck getting in there, and hope you make it on time.
You know what? I've still got a couple hours. I'm going to make it. I just hope they win because it has been a very interesting drive through this blizzard. But thanks, John, for having me. Anytime, I'll come on the show. Thanks for asking.
All right, thank you. Stephen John, WHB in Kansas City. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Morning, John. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I just want to say this Seahawks season was just fantastic. You know, making it to the playoffs in the first time in a couple
years. Oh, I agree.
And I just want to say this about the players. Now those players that, like Shaquille, the Griffins, and the McDougals, and the Carsons, now have playoff experience, and they can carry that to next year as well. Just like 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I think the emphasis has to be just getting the defense to get better. And again, the defense exceeded all expectations. I mean, I thought it was going to be a defense that would give up less than 23 points. It gave up like 21-2. So it did, kind of like I thought it was going to do. But now the key is to getting that defense where you can get the pass rush better, the coverage improve, less missed tackles, and start to get back into the teens like they were back in 2012 and 2014. And 2013.
Yeah, can we compete with the Rams next year?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, and again, it's, I know this is a basic formula, but again, the team scored 26.8 points, and so if it maintains the ability to run and gets the continuity on the line, that should stay about the same, or be, even if it drops down to 25, that's not bad. But if you get to the point now where you can get the defense only giving up, 18 to 17 points a game, now you're talking to be back in that 11 to 12 win area, and that's when you start to compete for the division title again. And you can see that this team matched up pretty well in the games against the Rams. Even though they lost the two games, they still played great and still almost won those games. But now, if you can get the defense better and then, keep adding to the offense, then I think that you start talking about getting back into being a division winner.
Yeah, and hopefully get that first seed.
I think there's a chance, yeah. Well, I don't know about the first seed, but again, I think, the key is just being able to win the division first and get the home game. You have to kind of look at the dynamics of, where every other team is as far as, getting the number one seed. But, if you can you win the division, and of course, when you're talking 11 or 12 wins, then you're talking about a top two seed in a bye week. So, the schedule is not as hard, I don't think, next year as it was this year. I know that they're playing the NFC South. That's going to be a challenge because, there's four good quarterbacks in that division. And but then you look over at the AFC North, where they're going to be playing. That right now, that division's in turmoil. I mean, coaching change in Cleveland. Baltimore's going with a running quarterback. Pittsburgh has all their problems with Antonio Brown. Cleveland's on the rise. But, what you're looking at is I don't think they're going to take on the number of quarterbacks that they face this year because they really had, with the AFC West and Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins, that they really had a big slew of good quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah. All right, John, thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bob in Idaho. Hey, Bob.
John, a quick question and then a comment. Quick question is, the Swizzy and Simmons, I believe, do you know whether their knee injuries were to the same knee that had been injured before?
Sweezy was a broken bone in the foot. It was a right foot, so that's a new injury. In the case of Simmons, I'm not sure which knee was affected, but again, it wasn't a major knee injury. It was just one that was just going to wipe him out for the season. So it's probably more of an MCL, my guess would be, than anything else. So it's not one that's going to affect him into the off-season program in that.
Then the question, and I think we disagree about this based on some prior phone calls, but I would argue that the Belichick proposed rule for challenges is something that needs to be seriously considered. Do you want to comment?
You're talking about challenges on interference?
No, he proposed a couple of years ago that the coaches be able to challenge any play, same rule, same number of challenges, but they could challenge any play that an official made a call.
Yeah, see, I don't like it. I think what it does is it slows down the game, and again, particularly in a year like this, where you saw really ups and downs as far as what the league wanted the officials to do. Mid-season, they wanted more holding calls because they thought there was different type of holding things, and so all of a sudden you had one week where there were 60 holding calls going up into the 90s. That was bad, and then you had all the different gyrations on the helmet role, which didn't turn out to be too bad, but lounging on the quarterback. And so now when you start to challenge everything, it's just too many stoppages in the game. I mean, you want less officiating, not more officiating, and you want less stoppages, not more stoppages.
I totally agree. So what am I missing here? Because if it's the same number of challenges, why would it slow the game down more?
Just because more challenges, if you're going to be able to challenge everything, I mean, you could go through a game and a coach is not going to make a challenge. Now if you can challenge everything, there's going to be four challenges a game, and that's, I just think, going to be too much. Again, you're not there to watch the officiating. You're not, you're there to watch the game and the plays and all that stuff. And there's going to be mistakes.
John, I think 100% of your listeners would agree with that. But I also know that there have been games where the critical play call was made by an official about a play that couldn't be challenged. And that just doesn't seem logical to me. Even if they had to restrict the challenges to meet your objection, your objection is a valid one. I don't disagree with it. Nobody wants to watch officials. But, I guess we just disagree.
You see, this is under the radar, but, you do have more reviews than ever before because, on every change of possession or on every score, there's a review. And so that wasn't there when they put replay in. And so now to then, add more replay challenges, it just is going to slow the thing down to a point now the games are going to be 3 hours and 10 minutes. And the one thing I think that you can now see from the last 2 years, there's more of a reluctance in New York, because now New York is dictating a lot of the calls, of even overturning. I mean, because they'll look at it and they say there's not enough there to overturn. And so, you may have more challenges, but you may not get more results as far as overturning things. Because again, there's still a reluctance to overturn it unless it's really noticeably bad.
Well, it's the only issue that I think I agree with Belichick and disagree with you. So have a good day.
Okay. Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet in Seattle. Jet, are you excited, or is the Prozac out?
Dr. John, how you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Well, let me tell you. I'm pretty much lukewarm on the Adam Gase hiring, but if they can also reel in Williams for the defensive coordinator, I am on board.
Don't you think that, I mean, he's obviously had any kind of defense, but don't you think that he'll do the right thing and put this into a 4-3 defense?
Oh, my God. There are so many good things I can say about Greg Williams coming to coach the Jets defense that we don't have enough time. But, yes, my God, finally, somebody rationally look at your personnel that you continue to draft, and it's a 4-3 personnel package. It's not 3-4. It has never been 3-4. So, my God, let's quit the crap and let's play to what we have, play to our personnel. And the thing I like about Greg Williams is he's very good about getting the most out of his players. And I'd love to see, I thought he did a great job with Jabril Peppers this year, and I really am excited to see what he could do with Jamal Adams. So I'm looking forward to that. The final thing I'll just say for Greg Williams, we'll move on, is he certainly will finally bring a strong sense of accountability to that team, but to that defense in particular. And enough of this nonsense of Darren Lee constantly making misreads, plugging the wrong hole, being in the wrong place, the defensive linemen not following their assignments, not doing what they're doing. No more Morris Claiborne blowing another game down the stretch with a couple of bad, getting burned on a long bomb pass coverages or stupid holding penalties. He will hold these guys accountable, and that has been a huge problem with the Jets, particularly in the Todd Bowles era. None of these guys were benched for poor performance or for screw-ups, except the brief couple of times where Muhammad Wilkerson missed a couple of meetings. But none of them have ever benched for performance, and you've seen how they've blown some of these games on stupid penalties and bad calls. Damn it, if you're not doing your job, sit your butt down. There's somebody else who will.
And that's great. Greg will do that because he's not going to tolerate mistakes.
You betcha. And this whole mental, mental mistake problem that's been chronic with the Jets, no more. So he's exactly the kind of taskmaster that defense is going to need. And I think it's that type of taskmaster that the Jets organization needs. And quite frankly, I suspect that's somewhat how Gase coaches as well. Because I think he's a bit of a hard hard butt also.
Right. But what I find fascinating is in the hiring process, what was the Chris Johnson doing or Mike Maccagnan doing? Because, you know, two guys ruled themselves out because, you know, they weren't allowed to really pick the assistant coaches that they wanted in the case of Mike McCarthy and Matt Rhule.
Well, I thought that was a bit odd with Mike McCarthy because, I mean, this guy's got obviously NFL chops and he clearly has an NFL network. So, I mean, this guy could clearly, commands, high quality assistants. Now, I can understand that with guys coming from the college ranks, because most of these guys don't have any NFL pedigree, and that's a real problem with NFL or college coaches coming into the NFL. So I can see where that would be a bit of a concern. And honestly, I am really glad they didn't pick up Rhule, for example, or dip into the college ranks to bring a head coach in, because. Mm-hmm. It's the game is different. The personnel is definitely different. You know, the rah-rah crap just doesn't work with these guys. And, you just really don't have the background to bring in some top-notch assistants, which first-time head coaches desperately need. So I'm glad the way it played out. And my supposition is that I get the impression that McCarthy's a bit burned out. And I don't think he was all fire and brimstone during the interview process, whereas I suppose Gaze still has a little bit of fire in the belly and is looking forward to still coaching. And I think that's where they kind of won him over. And in some regards, I think the bottom line was Gaze checked all the boxes. In other words, offensive guy, prior NFL head coaching experience, and is still young enough and hungry enough to still want to heavily compete, and that's where I think where McCarthy may have lost out. But that's just
I think you have a good read on that. Yeah, because I know that he limited the number of teams he was going to talk to because he didn't want to be too far away from Green Bay because his wife has a couple kids that are late in their high school days and want to finish in Green Bay for the high school, and so he eliminated going to Arizona and Tampa Bay, figuring it's an easier commute with New York and Cleveland. But I do think that he needed to refresh himself, just take the year off. Relax, regroup, get the energy back. And so if it wasn't the perfect job, and I guess with what they were dictating as far as staff, it wasn't going to be the perfect job.
Yeah, but what was your take? I thought that was weird with McCarthy, though, putting those some of those qualifications on him. I understand that with the college guys like Rhule, and I am really glad, again, that they didn't come up with him. I don't like him at all. But I thought that was odd with McCarthy and a tad disrespectful, but I agree with you. I think, hey, he's got kids. He wants to see them grow. Hey, he's getting paid next year. He doesn't need to work, so take the time off. Enjoy your family for
God's sake. And I think you're bringing up a good point because, do you think I was talking to somebody back there yesterday, and their feel was McCarthy finished fourth in the pecking order. Fourth. Now, how much of that could have been the fact he's making $8 million, and to get him, you probably have to pay him $9 million?
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, why else should he?
Right.
And he can perhaps come out of retirement, next year, and perhaps or whenever his contract runs out. I think it's next year.
Next year. He's got 1 year at $8 million.
Yeah, and then command similar type money. So it's like he's just not hungry at this point. And you're exactly right. Let him recharge. Let him regroup. Let him have a life. I mean, that's a tough job. And to do it for as long as he did, and as well as he did it, that takes an awful lot of personal sacrifice. And you know what these guys go through with the families, because they're the ones that always get the short end of the stick. And if you got teenage kids, it's like now or never. So, go do your family, And so I just don't think there's a lot of fire in the belly, where I think Gaze came off as fired up and ready to go. And, he was the McVay of the McVay, 3, 4, 5 years ago. So, I don't think his time has passed him by. And I'm curious to see what he's going to do.
Well, the big thing is I would have to think he doesn't have the voice in the 53-man roster, because that'll go to Mike Maccagnan. And I think what you saw is that he had the voice in the 53, and he chased too many players away. I mean, look at the guys that end up going to the Pro Bowl. Mike Pouncey, Jarvis Landry. Last year was Jay Ajayi. And Ndamukong Suh didn't go to the Pro Bowl this year. But I think they chased away too much talent, and that made the Dolphins a lesser team, and that's what cost him his job there. But now he'll get Sam Darnold. He's an offensive play caller. Looks like they'll get Greg Williams, and that's encouraging. So maybe at least for a while, you can stay off the Prozac.
Yeah, I think it's encouraging, John, overall. And again, given the choices that were available, I'm not that upset. You know, obviously, what I'm upset about is they lasted with Todd Bowles an extra year and missed Frank Reich, because I've been, you know, admiring Frank Reich since he was with the Bills, for God's sakes, and had that Music City miracle. But, and I also thought Maryland really screwed up by not giving him that job several years ago. But Frank Reich, to me, has been the real deal. And I was real upset when Numbskull up in New England left Indianapolis, and that let Reich fit in, because I figured he was going to be available the following year. The chips were going to fall, and hopefully he'd come to New York. That would have been my choice. But, given the choices they had available, it could have been worse. But you're absolutely right about the roster, and that was one big concern. Because in this day and age, you know, the Parcells, my way or the highway, especially if you don't have the pelts on the belt, doesn't really work with these guys. And, I'm really glad that he really hopefully is not going to have a whole lot of personnel input, because he doesn't seem to be real great either, judge of character or talent. And he tends to be rather polarizing. So, and I think, with Greg Williams, just give him that side of the ball and just leave him alone. You know, and
I think he'll do that.
Let him put the shopping order in for Maccagnan and see what he comes up with. But I think if they bring in Williams on the other side, I think they've done and keep the special teams coach, because he did one whale of a job this year. And I think they would have done a pretty good job here.
That's encouraging, Jet. Congratulations.
Well, I'm off the Prozac at least until September.
Okay, that sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Wenatchee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How's the weather normally? Sunny California, rainy?
Well, no, actually, it stopped, and it's sunny again. There's some clouds out there, but about 35 minutes ago, the rain stopped, and we got a break in the clouds, and so maybe there's going to be a break in the day.
Do you think that's going to affect the turf a lot?
Probably. I mean, not to the degree it's going to be in Kansas City, but it'll affect it a little bit because, again, none of the turfs, as I think Pete Carroll said that when we were talking about the turf that was there in Santa Clara, how bad that was. But I think this is kind of generic for all the turfs in the Bay, or at least in California, for whatever reason.
Sure. Hey, go back to maybe the coaching team. The last guy was touching on. I watch a lot of Pro Football Weekly every morning with Florio and Peter King. And between those two and yourself, I think those are some of the smartest guys that are covered in the NFL. Do you ever have a chance to cross paths with those guys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time. Know them very well. I mean, Pete, you say Pete Prisco, and who else?
Peter Mike King? Florio and Peter King.
Yeah. No, Peter and I go back when I was in Pittsburgh and he was in Cincinnati, and the two of us even started a notes network with 11 writers that we would get on a conference call every Thursday and just compare notes in that. In fact, I think 92, 91 was like the first year we did that.
Huh. Florio kind of touched on your guy, Joshy Boy, there, and he seemed to stop just short of saying that he doesn't understand all the hype around him either.
I think that's fair. I mean, you can see that he's not a great people person. I mean, what he is a great play caller and a very good student of the game. But, I mean, you've seen his failures. I mean, you saw it in Denver. You saw it, when he went to the Rams as an offensive coordinator. Now, again, when you get Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, I mean, you get two of the best ever. So you're going to be successful there. But, I mean, you know, he seems to make bad blunders at the wrong time. And what he did with the Colts, I think now ownership's around the league just basically, you don't know if you can trust them. And then the other aspect is, if you're going to be an assistant coach and seeing what he did to those assistant coaches, I mean, you don't know if you're going to be able to trust them.
Sure. Florio kind of touched on the Denver situation, how he ran that franchise in the ground real fast, and Elway had to come in and dig it out, you know, by a free agency, mm-hmm. and it set him back, and they're paying a little bit of the price now, it seems like.
Well, like you started off, he couldn't get along with Jay Cutler, which, of course, how many people can, but, you know, ended up trading him, and, you know, they made way too many moves. I mean, they got off to a good start. A lot of their early success was the fact that he had Mike Nolan as the defensive coordinator, and he made such great halftime adjustments that they were able to pull out the victory, but eventually they just became, you know, a horrible football team.
Well, you got rid of guys like Allstat back when he was a bruiser and all that sort of thing, and we
right.
kind of know the story behind that. But, hey, couple more things. Jack Del Rio, he's kind of fallen off the map when he was unceremoniously dismissed from the Raiders.
Well, because when you're hiring offensive coaches, you know, 40 and younger, the defensive coaches have to take a back seat. And so the only two coaches got jobs as defensive coaches. I mean, Brian Flores is going to get the Miami job. And then you saw that Vic Fangio got the Denver job. So it's just a matter that, you know, if you're a defensive coach and Jack Del Rio's a defensive coach, I mean, you have to kind of wait out the offensive guys. I mean, now there's only 12 defensive coaches that are in charge of their teams.
Yeah, I really thought he might be ticketed there in Denver since he'd been there in the past.
Yeah.
And that way kind of tends to go with some of the guys he's got a little bit more of a feeling for. So, all right, sir. Well, thank you. Have a good day down there.
All right. Same to you. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Mac Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, John Clayton, because it's always good to be on 710 ESPN with the professor during football season, especially a Final Four to get to the Final Four divisional weekend. And, John Clayton, before I get to the Elite Eight, of the 2018 season, let me say what a rough 11 days of 2019 so far. On the very first, the Huskies dropped the Rose Bowl to the Ohio Players team. 4 days later, the Seahawks gave up 16 yards on a 3rd and 14 and let the Cowboys hog tie an NFC wildcard game. Black Monday turned into White Tuesday through Friday, and last night, the Alaskan Way Viaduct died. I drove on the Viaduct for the final time last night, John Clayton. It was the best traffic jam ever. It was a giddy funeral procession. People lined up at the market, waving, horns honking, cameras rolling. And I'm sure I'll get no argument from Ben Longley when I say the best thing about the closure is no more too cool, bigger hurry than everyone else jackasses, cutting in line at the last damn possible second. So let me give a shout-out to the legacy of guys like Warren Peterson and others who I didn't see on the news, along with the memory of those who have gone on to glory for the gigantic team effort of building the Viaduct. And now, send in Godzilla to tear it down. And John Clayton, speaking of building up and tearing down, let me give a shout-out to the memory and legacy of a great man you knew well, Pro Football Hall of Famer, former Pittsburgh Steelers chairman and ambassador to Ireland, the late Dan Rooney, the main architect and builder of the NFL's Rooney Rule. Now, it hasn't been torn down the way the Viaduct will be, but it seems to be in the process of being dismantled. And what I mean, John Clayton, the Rooney Rule strength is based on transparency. Ironically, the lack of transparency has been the strength of the NFL on everything from CTE to Colin Kaepernick to domestic violence to Eric Reed's random drug test. And when I say Black Monday turned to White Tuesday through Friday, that was the speed in which coaches were fired and hired without one bit of transparency or adherence to the Rooney Rule, not even a fake right and go left as in years past, John Clayton. That's what Dale Hansen is saying when he says covert mm-hmm. racism. People get racism confused with bigotry. Bigotry is a bias against someone based on race, whereas racism is the political and economic power to to enforce policy, which is why Archie Bunker was so entertaining. He was a bigot without any power other than to sit in his lazy boy and talk smack. But John Clayton, when you, how can you prove the league is stonewalling Colin Kaepernick? Well, the slubs that got quarterback jobs this season is a good indicator, but not good enough. How can you prove Eric Reed, the other notorious kneeler, has been unfairly targeted with random drug tests? Even the players' union had to sign off on the fact there's no way of really knowing. How can you prove the NFL would rather have Pat Boone and Elvis Presley on the sideline as head coaches instead of Chuck Berry and Little Richard? In my estimation, 15 years after the establishment of the Rooney Rule, the NFL is transparently non-transparent. So starting with the Arizona Cardinals, what's your take on who was fired, who was hired, and who shouldn't have been fired nor hired, John Clayton?
Well, they should not have fired Steve Wilks after 1 year. That was a mistake. They shouldn't have eight openings because there weren't eight guys that are going to be successful in being able to turn their franchises around. But the one I thought was the worst was Steve Wilks. Hey, I want to try to run here because I want to try to squeeze in Victor and Auburn before we go. Hey, Commando, thank you. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Thank you.
Hey, good call, Commando. Good call on those. Quick question, John.
Yes, very good.
Why does what does Elway have an issue with Dennison? I heard that's the main sticking point with Kubiak.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, and see, and this goes back to why Kubiak retired, because it wasn't, I think, because of health, is because he wanted him to fire Rick Dennison and fire the tight ends coach, and now Kubiak, to come back, wants to bring those guys back, and I think Elway's resisting it. And so that's why, you know, he'll either stay in the front office, Gary, or go to Jacksonville or some other place. But, yeah, it comes down that John Elway does not want Rick Dennison and the tight ends coach to be there for some reason.
If Kubiak doesn't stay with Denver, and I know that people could trade for coaches. Is he available to be traded, or is he just signed with somebody?
No, I think that if he wants to go to Jacksonville, which I think that's the team that's interested in him most, because I think they're interested in Joe Flacco, then I think they'll let him go. Again, it'll be more out of friendship than anything else. I don't know what his contractual situation is, but right now he's in a front office role, not a coaching role.
Yeah, I think he's going to stay in Denver. He likes Denver, and that's where his family's
at.
And then one last question. I heard the Munchak might be the lead candidate for the offensive thing. What style does he bring? Take care, John. Have a good weekend, bud.
Okay. Yeah, but Munchak, I mean, what he does is that he's an offensive line coach. He's not an offensive play caller. I mean, what he does is get good blocking. And after losing Pete Kugler, I think they wanted something like that. But I don't know if he's what his contractual situation is. Pittsburgh. Hey, thank you, everybody. Heading to the game with the Rams and the Cowboys. I'll be back on Monday at 10, the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.